Okay, we will resume with the second half of day three, and we will start with our audio postcard.
All right, here it comes.
Today, file explore space,
Get rid of
speech on demand.
speech. Let's take a tour of the HowPress building with Dan Roy, Director of Brailler Operations at Perkins School for the Blind. Our first stop on the tour is the rack bar assembly workstation.
Just one, yeah. So this is a staker. So I listened for that, like is like it for production. So that's kind of a sound of the factory. He's making the rack bar.
A man with a broad smile operates a pressing type of machine, while another man holds a long, slender bar and illustrates the rocking motion of the bar.
The rack bar is in the brailler, and every time you hit a key, the rack bar moves. And this is what actuates the constant force beam to make the dots. So it's really kind of an important part of the brailler.
Next, we move on to the stylus machine.
This machine over here, this makes the stylus that makes the dot. So what happens here is we put in the stylus and it bends it. So each stylus has a particular bend, and there's three different of it. So
the machine features a large circular brushed aluminum plate mounted flush onto a dark blue work table frame. Mounted evenly around the perimeter of the plate are four rectangular aluminum fixture bases with clamp blocks designed to hold small metal parts securely in place. We move on to the casting machine.
Sure, one of these. So these are machining centers. They're not used much anymore, if at all. But these were. This is where all of our castings were machined.
This is a heavy-duty metal milling machine completely enclosed in an off-white and dark gray steel cabinet resting on a concrete shop floor. The middle section features two large sliding doors set at a slight backward angle. A large control console box is mounted on the right side of the machine, housing a square display screen, an array of control buttons, and a red emergency stop button. We find a three-tiered cart of casting tools placed adjacent to the casting machine.
These are the tools that feed into those machining centers. So they're all set up and identified. So depending on which casting you're machining, you would grab the appropriate tool and load it into the machine.
The cart is densely packed with dozens of metal tool holders with various cutting tools, drill bits, and end mills inserted. The tools stand upright, fitted snugly into round cutouts or holders lining the shelves. The brailler chain assembly machine is our next stop.
So this is the chain in the brailler, you know, the chain. So this operation is where we can make these chains. So we have a lot of these little hand operations.
The chain assembly machine is mounted on a long wooden workbench. Running horizontally along the length of the workbench is a long, heavy metal rail or guide track mounted upright on a thick wooden support block. A metal track or rack and pinion style channel runs along the top surface, with a small chain is laid out and guided horizontally. Mounted directly behind the linear guide is a large horizontal spool containing a large roll of woven metal cable or beaded chain. Nearby is the chain drive assembly workstation.
The chain drive, and this machine, it puts the bushings in it, presses the dimensions of press.
Here we see a man holding a long, intricate silver-colored cast aluminum frame piece. The part has several cutouts, circular mounting bosses, and small projecting tabs along its length. On the right side of the workbench sits a heavy-duty vertical press machine with a long dark steel fixture bar that extends forward from the base of the press. The machine features alignment pins and mounting blocks designed to secure the aluminum frame. Our last stop is the Braille Bloom Assembly Workbench.
Manufactured at Braille Bloom. So this first bench is where we make the cases. And then once the case is all made, assembled, we bring it over here and we install the PC board. And then we do our final testing. We hook it up, we make sure that it's translating and doing what it's supposed to do. And then we have the finished units getting ready for packaging. That's kind of impressive. So, yeah, the cool thing is that we're actually producing a product on campus, not offshore. So the blooms are going to be made here at Perkins for as long as we can.
The Braille Bloom is a flat, rectangular blue metal base plate containing several internal electronic components. A black rectangular module near the upper middle section, along with a small red and white wiring harness and connectors tucked into the corners along the edges. At the top of the workstation is a long rack of bright blue plastic parts organizer bins positioned directly under an LED light strip. Adjacent to the workstation is a long workbench filled with completed Braille blooms lined up in neat rows. We see over a dozen rectangular metal assemblies arranged in an orderly side-by-side rows extending into the background. Each unit consists of the flat blue metal base equipped with a large green printed circuit board PCB mounted flush inside. Small black components, connectors, switches, and wiring harnesses are visible attached across the surface of each green board. Thank you for joining us on a tour of the Howe Press building at Perkins School for the Blind.
Thank you, Wendy, for those postcards from Perkins. You're a terrific describer. Okay, now we will move on to the second half of day three and hand it over to the Code Maintenance Committee Chair, Matthew Horspool.
Thank you, Judy. Hello, everybody. Once again, it's good to be back with you. Just some housekeeping before we get started. We are running a little bit shorter on time than anticipated, so there's been some work done in the background. If you are a member of the Code Maintenance Committee, but you're not a member of the Executive Committee, you should have been promoted to panelist status, and that will allow you to participate in the discussion a little bit more freely. If you believe that you're a member of the Code Maintenance Committee and you haven't been promoted to panelist status, please pop your hand up and Holly, our wonderful moderator, will take care of that. But I think that it has all been done. So with that said, I'm going to get on and start the session. Now, I realise that yesterday we had a somewhat adjourned conversation about whether to assign a charge for task CMAD. The outcome of that discussion was not particularly unanimous, and I don't, in view of the time, I don't really want to come back to that discussion just yet, because I think we need to deal with a few other things first. I'm aware of the discussion, and if we have time at the end of this session, we will come back to it. Otherwise, I think probably the best thing to do is to note it, and then we can discuss it either at an executive committee meeting or perhaps the Code Maintenance Committee can discuss that in more detail at a follow-up meeting, perhaps. But what I'd really like to talk about today is the prioritisation of our future work. I should say I did take some notes from yesterday's discussion. I have updated the charges spreadsheet with what came out of yesterday's discussion, largely so that I could stay on track with where we are today. Before we get into the meat of it, just I'd like to set some context for the conversation that follows. I said yesterday that there's the opportunity cost of being the code maintenance officer, which is that whilst I do code maintenance work, I can't be doing paid work. That is an opportunity cost that I have felt quite strongly, and it's led to me having a lot less time to be the code maintenance officer than I had thought I might have when I took this on. And this has been an ongoing issue for some time, and I've tried various strategies to sort of to combat that, but none of them have been especially successful. And so I'm still here with not really enough time to concentrate on code maintenance work. The other aspect of it is that when I took on the code maintenance officer role, I'd not long come out of being a full-time Braille transcriber, and so I felt like I had, a particular affinity with the rules because I was working with them every day and I was transcribing Braille according to them every day. My career has taken me in a slightly different direction. I'm now doing a lot more with, I mean, still with Braille, but a lot more in terms of Braille promotion through the Braillists, Braille training, Braille technology support, and that sort of thing, which has kind of taken me away from the coalface of UEB rules. And the further away from that coalface I get, the harder I find it to get myself back into a state where I could actually think about the intricacies of UEB rules. And that perhaps leads in some part to me not really having enough time to do it. So, I've spoken to a few members of the executive committee about this and about perhaps what the way forward might look like. I don't want to leave code maintenance completely, and I certainly don't want to leave ICEB completely. I feel like I still have a lot to offer to ICEB, and that's something that we'll continue to explore. And I feel like I have quite a lot to offer to code maintenance, but perhaps not as the main person kind of steering the ship, so to speak. And so I had a conversation, I've been having a few conversations with Jodie Doolan from Australia about perhaps the best way to handle this. And what we've sort of come up with is the idea that Jodie will take over the role of code maintenance officer. There'll be an extended period of transition. So this is not going to happen straight away. I'm going to finish off the work on numeric mode that we've very nearly finished anyway. I'll make sure that gets over the line. There'll be a sort of an induction period in which I'll probably oversee probably one more piece of substantive work as the code maintenance officer, in which Jody will shadow me and give me some support in getting that done a little bit more quickly, and perhaps hold me to account a bit if things don't get done quickly enough. And then probably around about Christmas time, we see that mantle being passed on and Jody taking over officially as code maintenance officer and steering the work of the code maintenance committee at least through the next 18 months to 2 years, at least until the next General Assembly. And then, of course, it will be up to the nominations committee to decide who they're going to nominate next time. I have a particular interest thinking about the work that I do in assistive technology training and Braille training and things like that. I have a particular interest in typeforms, insofar as I have an interest in screen readers knowing how to respond when, for example, you've got spelling errors and grammar errors. At the moment, I know of at least one screen reader which, because it's a red wavy underline in Word, they're treating that as a regular underline. And so every time a word is misspelt, a screen reader shows the underline typeform word indicator, which we're pretty sure is not really what they should be doing. However, I can't give them a very good answer as to what they should be doing instead. So, I have an interest in the typeform issue in getting that sorted out and making sure that we have rules that are robust enough that we can start to tell screen reader manufacturers what to do. And that may not just involve the code maintenance committee, that may involve the code maintenance committee writing rules that are liberal enough that the Braille Technology Committee can then work with those rules and come up with some proposals. I also have a particular interest in the issue of emojis. As a heavy Braille screen input user, I'd quite like to be able to write them. And it's important that we're also able to read them as a Braille display user. Actually, I don't know to what extent I really want to read them. I think to a large extent, I actually want them to get out of the way. So I have an interest in the emoji issue from both angles, all three angles, from writing them, from reading them, and from reducing the clutter on Braille displays. And so one of the proposals that we've put forward is that whilst Jody is holding the role of code maintenance officer and steering the code maintenance committee through the main work of the code maintenance committee, we might form a special subcommittee that might only last for a year or two to hash out this issue of emojis. And I envisage that I would have enough time and enough motivation, I think it's fair to say, to chair that committee. This would be a completely new area of UEB. It would be writing probably a whole new section of the rulebook rather than updating an existing section. It's a piece of work that is just a standalone piece of work, where the impact on other UEB rules is likely to be quite minimal. And so that's how we see that going. So I will write to the code maintenance list and explain all of this after this meeting. The executive committee spoke about this last month, and a motion was passed. So unless we hear any contradiction from the floor, that is what is going to happen, is that Jody's going to take over. Jody and I had long conversations about when it was appropriate to share the news. So Jody is aware that I was going to share the news today and not yesterday, and was fully aware of the situation when she was involved in the discussions yesterday, and of course will be aware of it today, continuing in those discussions. So I just wanted to share that before I get into the meat of prioritising our work. So, I want to look at the section of my report which is called Short-Term Future Work. It's underneath, you've got the heading for charges, the heading for tasks, and then you've got Short-Term Future Work. I've identified a few things in this. Section 9 on typeforms, the errata and the combined updates, which we talked about yesterday. Section 5 on grade 1 mode, and some additional changes arising from the section 1.7 update that the Guidelines for Technical Materials Committee put together. And that's all I've really got on my list of short-term work. This is, when I say short-term, this is work that I see us doing in the next 6 months to a year, shall we say, and then obviously we'd need to prioritize work beyond that. We could potentially add the issue of crosses, the new charge for crosses that we talked about yesterday. We could potentially add that to the list of short-term work. I don't think that's going to take a huge amount of time. Beyond that, we've identified some work that between Jody and myself have identified some work that we would quite like to do in the longer term, having got those shorter term things out of the way. Jody is very interested in letter modifiers, and so would be quite like to take that piece of work forward. Also is interested in arrow and shape mode, and I've already spoken to my interest in emoji characters. So that gives you the context of the of what I wrote in my report. I appreciate that arrow and shape mode came up in Clive's meeting yesterday, and so it may end up being that that ends up being given a slightly higher priority than we envisaged when Jodie and I started talking about this. But I think what I'd quite like to do now, having set all of that context, is just open it up for discussion and see if anybody has any thoughts at this stage. Firstly, to members of the Code Maintenance Committee, and then we'll move out from there. So just pop your hand up if you'd like to say anything. Thank you, James. I was just about to say we have stunned silence. You're about to break the silence. Go for it, James.
I'm about to break the silence. So I'd like to again mention small groups and subgroups, that kind of thing. And I'd like to raise the contraction of particular words, which has been a long-standing charge. And some work has already been done, and it's suddenly got stuck, and I don't know how we progress that work.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It got stuck. Why did it get stuck?
It I don't
got
know.
Stuck because, well, I'll have a go at answering why it got stuck. It feels very overwhelming. Is part of the reason why it got stuck, and we tried various ways of reducing the overwhelm, but I don't know. None of them really seem to quite resonate with me in terms of how to do that. And so I agree with you that this is another piece of work where perhaps a small. I mean, what I would now that I'm not. Chairing the committee so much anymore. What I would really like to see as an outcome of this is actually for a small group of people, as you say, to just, and it doesn't even need to be that many people, maybe two or three people, to go away and work on it and to give us the big long report, to give us, okay, here's the words that we can add straight away which are not contentious. Here are the words that we think are contentious that we need to vote on. And then I think that would be a very overwhelming report, but I think what that would do is give us a bit of a state of the nation as to where we are. I think one of the things that really that really got to me was we'd been given a list of a few words, which is what we'd agreed a few years ago. But it wasn't very clear to me what was that as a percentage of the whole corpus, you know,
well, I can tell you
what
that.
Is the scale of the problem that we are dealing with, and then I think when we know that,
well, I can tell you that because that work has already been done by FM and myself primarily. I think Jen, you may have had a good hand in it too. So we have a master list. I think Matthew, you may have been involved in it too. We
I was
have
involved
a master
in the UK's master list. I wasn't.
That's right, and then
the
that
ICB
that
one.
And that master list was sent to the US to compare. And by and large, I think there were only, it was around about 12 to a dozen words which we didn't agree, you know. So there's a large degree of agreement already in a large list of words. It just needs to be progressed.
Yes.
This is FM. Can I chime in a little
Hi,
bit?
Hi, FM,
sure.
Yes.
Okay. So it's funny you should mention this, James, because I was going to reach out to you again and to Jennifer Dunham, because I see you're on this call also, and to Phyllis Landon, because I know that a number of people have looked at these various lists. And part of the issue, why it came up recently, and I was going to reach out to you all again, was because the Braille Enthusiast Dictionary, which is a book that Kay Holbrook and I put together with the help of many, many people a number of years ago, we're trying to do an electronic version, and we want to make sure that the list is correct. Some of you are aware of the fact that Dr. Kay Holbrook, who's recently retired from the University of British Columbia, is very ill. And so the work on that had stalled, but I had talked to the publishers, and they're still very keen on doing the book. So it would be actually a timely discussion to have maybe with a small group. To help that project along, as well as thinking about winnowing out the words that are truly contested that perhaps the Code Maintenance Committee should be discussing, and what are really not all that contested, and that we can just take off the list. So perhaps this is something we can be discussing offline, but since it came up, James, Jennifer, you're fair warning, Phyllis, if she's on this call as well, to have a further discussion about this. Is that too much information? Should I?
No, that's about the right amount of information, actually. Thank you very much, and I'm sorry to hear about Kay Holbrook not being very well. I wasn't aware of that, and yeah, pass on best wishes. I didn't know her terribly well, but I think I
I
helped her
will.
record a paper once or twice for one of these meetings. Okay. Well, like I say, I think this is another one of these small group projects where I think if everybody's agreeable, yeah, James, your name's been put forward. Your name gets put forward for a lot of things, so I realise
It
that there may be some restrictions on your time. But yeah, your name's been put forward, Francis, Mary, Jennifer, Phyllis. I would certainly, from my point of view, and I don't know if Jody's got any thoughts on this, but I would certainly be happy enough for you to carry on with that project. And then I think come to us and tell us what you need, because I think that's not, I mean, it's kind of clear what you need. What you need is for us to adjudicate on some words, but I think tell us which words you need us to adjudicate on, and then we can work out what we need to do. And I mean, one possibility for the Braille Enthusiasts Dictionary would be just to weed those words out and just to not include them until the Code Maintenance Committee's made a decision. But yeah, that I think would be a useful project. I see, Jody, you've got your hand up. You'll need to
Oh,
unmute
hi
yourself.
Matthew.
There you go.
Yes,
Yeah, hi, yeah.
certainly that work. I'd love to see it progress. I was just wondering if that was different or related to, remember, James, you put together a whole lot of kind of problem words as that were we were meant to go to our Braille authority. And do you remember that work?
It's probably exactly the same.
Exactly
Yes.
the same.
Yeah, so we have a list. FM, correct me, I think it's about 700 or 800 words, isn't it?
Well, this is FM again. I know you had a much longer list that included a number of place names, especially
Yes. Yes.
that the project that Kay and I had been doing was using Merriam-Webster's dictionary, and so they didn't happen to have a lot of UK place names. In it. So I think your list was more extensive than ours. So I'm not sure if you want to make that a separate project or we could talk about that.
Have a feeling that our list was based on previous Braille publications.
Yes, it was.
So,
Book, perhaps.
for example, BAUK and
Yeah.
Banner publications, which give us a head start in what are the words we should include.
That's what I remember too.
Yes.
I do
One.
remember we've been talking about even, since I've been involved, it's been, I don't know, it was pr before the Auckland General Assembly, so it was
Oh, crumbs, yeah.
Oh,
This has been talking about 2018, I think.
I was going to say,
2018.
it's been going on for about 10 years, I think. One of the
Ah.
things I'd like us to consider in the context of this work, that the other thing that is probably going to hold it up, and one of the things we might be able to sidestep is where does it end? The original charge is to expand Appendix 2, but I mean, look, you could expand Appendix 2 and you could list 5,000 words in Appendix 2 if you really wanted to, and I mean, I'm sure we probably don't, but we could, and that would take up a whole Braille volume, possibly a whole two or three Braille volumes just by itself. And the question is, do we really want Appendix 2 to get out of control like that, and how do we define what word
So,
goes onto the list and what doesn't? So I have a proposal, and then I'll hear you, James. What I was going to suggest was that we perhaps modify charge CM22, I think it's CM22,
that's right.
to compile the list, but that the list does not necessarily have to be Appendix 2. And I think what that would do is twofold. It would retain the scope, the very clear scope of what Appendix 2 is trying to do, which is to collect all the examples in the rule book. And it would also allow that list, if the list is published as a separate document, would allow us to be a lot more agile about how we publish it. We could just, we could say, right, we've got 300 words, we'll just publish it. And then we could agree, one of the ideas that came out following yesterday's session about the errata was that we could publish the errata at set times. So we could say every March and every September, for example, we're going to publish a new errata. We could almost do the same for the word list, and we could say, well, the word list gets published once every 6 months as its own standalone document, and it could be a document that people print off or a document that people search through, download. I'm wondering, James, you will either endorse that or have a counter proposal. So I'll hear you first, and then I wonder what other people think of that.
So I do have a counter proposal, and the counter proposal would be to keep the spirit of CM22, and the base word list is those words which were included in previous Braille publications, so BAUK, stroke UCAF, Barnet, and any other Braille authorities which have words, because the majority of these words come up from transcribers who encounter a problem word and submit it to the Braille authority. And I'm hoping that the flow of words, once this work is done, will be quite slow after we've done this charge. So you might get two or three new words maybe every couple of years. So I don't know if we need to republish it as a separate document every 6 months. I really don't think that's going to be necessary.
Okay, I have some thoughts, but anybody else?
Oh, hi, Matthew. I guess I was just, I haven't really thought about this issue for a while. But I guess I'm interested in how many more words would be added, are you thinking? Is it sort of the order 12 or possibly lots more? It was just an idea that with the Braillists Enthusiast Dictionary, could that be a good resource that ICB could, kind of endorse in a way the content contained there?
Sadly, not because of the publication. I'm not paying £200 for it.
Well, so I take that point. There is also the not wanting to undermine what the Braille Enthusiast Dictionary is trying to do. So I think we would, it's a fair point. We would need to be a bit careful about that. And I
So
see we have a hand.
the list is
It's
about
from
800, which if you look at the previous Braille publications on both sides of the Atlantic, they both have significantly more words than Appendix 2.
So 700 or 800 words are the words that are in contention, but there's only 12 that there was not there weren't there wasn't agreement on
That's
between.
right.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, got it.
Cool. We've got a hand from Jen. We've also got a hand from Jennifer. So I'll take them in that order. Jen first, and then Jennifer.
Thanks, Matthew. I'll be quick. I do like the idea of maybe publishing this as its own list because Because of the nature of what it is and however things may need to be added so it doesn't hold things up, I sometimes get concerned because somebody like, we start discussing, and I mean the we very broadly, we start discussing a word that like appears one in like a million, it literally is like one in a million. So I'm all for this list. I'm all for how we do it. I'll help in any way I can as well. But I just want to make sure that we don't get caught up in like, I don't know, some made up word from Alice in Wonderland kind of thing where that could divert our time from other things. And I know that's not the majority of this work. I just would want us to think about like, do we need to include every single place name, every single word that someone comes across once in a blue moon? Thank you.
Sure,
I'm gonna mute
absolutely
myself.
right, Jen. Absolutely right. And there are several words in the UCAF list. Matthew, you'll remember this. And we went round the UCAF group. Does anybody know what this word it actually is? Remember
Yes,
that?
I do remember
So
that,
you're
yes.
absolutely right there, Jen.
Jennifer Dunham, hello.
Hello. I just want to say I also think that the idea of publishing a list as a standalone list is fine, and I think getting through the majority of the work of doing the base list as we've talked about, and then maybe figuring out how often to update it, because as we all know, we've been talking about transcribers, but this is going to be a helpful resource for Braille translation program developers as well, and we want to make sure it's agile enough to keep up with new words or new developments as they happen, but also not, again, like Jen was saying, not something that diverts too much of our energy.
Yes, you said what I think I was going to say in a slightly different way, which was that I think just to respond to James's point about we don't necessarily need an update every 6 months. I think yeah, that's something that we would probably evaluate as Jennifer's just said once we've published the initial version. And I think if we got to a point where look, let's just pick a year. We're going to publish the fourth edition in 2032, right? Just because it's a year that's not 2028. So let's say we publish that. Now let's say in 2032 we look at that list and we say, well, hang on, this list hasn't been updated since 2030. That might be a time when we say, well, look, actually, this is clearly stable enough now that it could be turned into an appendix, and we might at a later time decide that that's something that we want to do. Or we might at a later time decide that actually, no, this list keeps actually getting updated. Every 3 or 4 months we add something to it. So I think what I'm suggesting is that we retain the charge to create the list, but that we remove from it that it should be an appendix, and then we can decide that as and when we need to decide it.
This is FM. I think that's a really good idea. And I think it's a separate project than what I was just referring to. Although it would be helpful to, have some agreement about some of these words that keep cropping up that are not the most obscure words.
I have a hand up from Jody, which I will take. I've also a hand up from Jennifer Dunham. I think this is a holdover from last time. Jennifer, if it isn't, if you put your hand down and then back up again, you'll be underneath Jody in the list and I'll see that it's a fresh hand. Jody.
Yeah, I thought Jennifer was first, but it's down. So, oh, and just I'm in agreement. That sounds like a plan. And I guess, if we do have that smaller group, that will, help not to distract from ongoing code maintenance discussions and probably help to focus and progress the work with the word list. Yeah.
All right, thank you. We're getting up against time a bit, so I'm going to propose a motion to the. This is a motion to the executive committee. It's a slightly funny setup, this with the joint committee working. So the motion to the executive committee, which I shall move, is to amend charge CM22 as follows. Create. Create a word list to include problem words after deciding how they are to be contracted. So the original CM22 is expand appendix 2 word list to include problem words after deciding how they are to be contracted. My motion is for an amendment to be create a word list to include problem words, etc., etc. So I shall move that. Do I hear a second from the executive, please?
Jen will second.
Thank you. On the executive, all in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed?
No, thank you for
Motion
bringing
carries.
It up, James.
That's okay.
Yeah. Thank you, James.
I just
so,
thought it was work that was started and it's got
yeah,
stalled. And
yeah,
there's
you.
No reason why it can't continue and come to at least some kind of conclusion.
No, yes. So I think the to-do from that is, am I reading the room right, that the to-do from that is that, FM, are you going to continue to instigate the work on this, at least in the short term? Or would you rather that be passed on to somebody else?
No, I can do that. And
brilliant.
I'll just be working with you, James, to make
sure
that we're talking about the same.
I'm pretty sure I've still got the old files.
Yeah,
Can you just give me a moment, someone, because I think something's gone wrong here. I don't like Word. I don't like the page up and page down keys. Can I delete them?
So, FM, a to-do for you to reach out to James, read the word list. Is
yes.
that sufficient? Okay.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. So the way that I see this working is that the small group will just work on it. And then when the small group have something to say, then write to either myself or Jody, possibly both of us, but write to whichever one of us is code maintenance officer at the time. And then we can
share
put that into the queue of things to do. Yes.
It'd be good to share with the committee, you know, progress.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they might need more input. They mightn't be able to solve some words. They might, you know, need to put that to the rest of the committee.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think it's we didn't really discuss CM22 when we were talking about priorities in our discussions prior to this midterm, did we?
No, it never really came up.
We sort of skipped over that one.
But that's good. So that's
good to bring
useful,
it back on the table.
That's a useful outcome. Thank you.
Yeah,
so you're back up. Excellent. Thank you. You're restored.
No, it's the page down key. I don't like
yes,
it.
Yes, it's all right. In the half an hour that we have left, I would really just like to go over then what we're proposing to do in the next year or so. So there is this review of section 9. There's the errata and the updates to section 6. Yes, so that there's finishing off section 6. The yeah. section 6 work will introduce one other rule change, which we will embed into the errata and get that published. Reissuing section 5 on grade 1 mode, and then those additional updates to based on GTM section 1.7. I put those in some sort of order, and the reason why I did that is my own interest in typeforms. I would really like to be involved in that work and to have some sense of leadership of that work. The errata, I think, could probably happen in parallel with that work, to be honest, or could possibly even just happen. I don't know that we necessarily need to spend vast amounts of time on that. I mean, look, I think basically we already know what's wrong. We just need to put it into a document and get it published. So I'm not even sure that the Code Maintenance Committee particularly needs to be involved in that piece of work. It may just be something that that Jody and I work on between us, possibly with FM, if you're up for it. And then
I'm always up for
And then it's grade one mode and GTM, the additional updates from GTM. I think what I'd like to understand is, well, before we agree the order of that, given that Clive's issue of shape mode came up yesterday, I think I'd just like to understand how urgently does Clive need an answer from the Code Maintenance Committee? Because I think that will help to inform prioritizing of work.
It impacts the symbols work, yeah.
Yes, so that needs to be.
And there's a question in my mind, should the CMC do that, or should the technical materials do that, or should they be done jointly? Because
Well, I'm open for.
arguably the shapes are used more in the technical materials, but not exclusively in the technical materials.
Yeah, I was thinking initially it would be more CMC to establish the rules and then, more work for the technical materials to flesh out all the examples and how they're used in practice. But but Jen made the point in the email I just read this morning, that shapes are common outside of technical material as well. So, yeah, I thought it would be quite a simple task just to clarify the rules, but now we've got, well, you were made you made an argument to actually
Sorry.
maybe change the rules, and that's a bigger task, I think, if we're going to redefine shape mode, which isn't properly defined in the first place.
But it, okay, so it sounds like actually this is gonna that it needs to be done needs to be done ASAP in order for the tech the guidelines for technical materials committee to progress their symbols work. I also think that probably at least a discussion about type forms needs to happen because if we agree that double struck is a type form, which I would vote in favour of, but we haven't had that discussion yet. If we were to say that double struck is a type form, then or at least that we could treat it as a type form, then actually that would also contribute to their work. So I think what I'm leaning towards is actually to keep the priorities as they are. But make sure that the very first thing. So hang on, because you also need to look at crosses. I think, yes.
I also did a little bit of initial work on the modifiers, just a little bit of thinking in a way that you might like to reserve a few symbols so that they don't miss out as we plow on with technical symbols. Try not to forget that we need to save some for dots above and dots below and.
A good point. It's a very good point.
There was a hand. The hand was from Clive. Hiya, Clive.
Hello there. I thought, well, yesterday Matthew and I we agreed that we would get together and talk about a common approach to well, it was something to do with symbols. My own, it was to do with type forms. That's right.
Two type forms, yeah.
Yes. So we need to resolve that. And I think we do need to ask for some clarity around shape mode from your committee, Matthew. I don't know if I'd say it was a super high priority, but there are some decisions that the guidelines for the technical committee needs to make that might depend on the outcome of that and whether it again should be a sort of inter-committee discussion, perhaps along the same lines as type forms, that we could look at that possibility as well. So maybe we can just sort of combine those two points
Oh,
when
this
you and
is
I get
ludicrous.
together, right? After.
Forgive me, folks, I'm out of
Yeah.
action again.
Oh dear.
Oh, dear.
This is, I don't know what I don't know what's going on. It just says page one of one, and I know there's more notes than that.
Oh dear. I
Yeah.
hope there's a
Yeah.
recording.
That there will be, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very valuable, Clive.
And also the technology committee.
I don't like it. Blame Microsoft. That's what I do. I missed your point there, Clive. Sorry.
Well, I was just saying that if we go back a couple of minutes, that Matthew and I had agreed to already have a get our heads together about maybe a common understanding of whether of type forms, because that will lead to whether double struck characters are actually an example of type forms as opposed to individual symbols.
Thank
And
you.
maybe while we're doing that, we can also work out whether there needs to be a common approach to shape mode, or whether we'll just wait for his committee to look at that first. But again, by 'cause there are technical elements to shape mode, obviously we could do a combined thing, but it may be that it would be better for his committee to look at that first. But we could maybe just talk about that behind the scenes, Matthew, and just 'cause
I
I
think
think
we could.
it was going to lead to a meeting. Remember, there was the idea of type forms was sufficient perhaps to lead to a face-to-face meeting to make a decision, because
Yes.
it's kind of going to set us in one direction or another. And sometimes when you need to make those decisions, it's better to just discuss it face to face and then see where it goes. But you and I were just going to talk about
Yes.
whether to sort of head in that direction or not.
I think the other way we can see this is if we go back to how UEB was formed in the first place, what happened, as I understand it, and I was certainly not involved in this process, so others who were, feel free to correct me. But my understanding of how the process worked, in a very broad brush sense, is that a committee got together, or several committees got together, and decided what they wanted to happen. They decided what the outcome should be. And then, having decided what the outcome should be, a bit later on, another group of people, another committee, worked backwards through the outcomes and said, how do we write rules which achieve these outcomes? And so you ended up with things like the reader rules that came out in 2002, 2004, something like that, which was not comprehensive at all. It just said what the reader needed to know. And then you had the rules committee that fleshed it out. So one way in which we could square this, as Clive said, is to have a meeting that talks about the two of them. But more fundamentally than that, even if we agree what we want to do with shape mode, that should then sufficiently empower Clive's committee to get on and create symbols based on what we agree about what we want to do about shape mode. And actually, we could, in fact, having reached a common agreement of what we want to do about it, we could, in fact, be writing the rules at the same time. We don't need to wait until the rules are finished before Clive starts work on devising the symbols, because I think both of those pieces of work may end up taking longer than we think. But even if they don't, they might end up taking about the same amount of time. So I wonder what people think of that idea. And that would allow the code maintenance committee then to not feel the pressure to work on two meaty sections when we've actually, because there's what we need for Clive, which is very fair and reasonable. There's also the problem that the more we work on big sections of things, the more we forget about the small things that we know we should have done. You know, like the very minor updates to section 5, you know, on grade one indicators. We know at the moment that we need to do it, but if we get too bogged down in writing rules for this and that, you know, we forget. So, is there any opposition to that? I'm not going to make it a motion. I don't think we need it to be a motion. But is there any opposition to that idea that we have a meeting, we establish the principle of what we would like to do, and then within our respective committees, we go off and do it and hope that we all end up at the same place at the end? And if we don't end up at the same place at the end, then we perhaps have another meeting to work out why we didn't end up at the same place. But if the principle is robust enough, we shouldn't have that. Jen, you have a hand up.
So I'm not in opposition. I just wanted to, my thought was, if committees are working separately, could there be someone who's like a liaison or something so that it's not like the committees are, and maybe I misunderstood you, but so it's not like the committees are just, people are just going off and doing their own thing and then coming back a few months later and going, oh, yeah, here's what we did. And then the other committee says, oh, well, we actually did this. And then, you got to work that out. If there was some overlap, that probably would address that challenge of the two separate committees not
Yes.
ending up in the same place.
My view on this, and I'll call on Jodie in case she has a different one, but my view is that Jodie is very involved in the work that Clive's committee is doing on symbols, and would also be very involved in the work that the Code Maintenance Committee would be doing on shape mode, and so we would have a de
That
facto
sounds great to me.
liaison there.
I don't know if it sounds great
Jodie,
to you, Jody, but
yeah, I was just going to say.
see
Well,
how quickly we rope
I
you
don't
in.
let things go.
You agree with you agree to one thing. See how quickly we.
And the other
Well,
point is
of
that
course, they're interrelated, a
it's
lot of
not
these.
like my committee is going to do its own thing with shape mode. We just want to know what the rules are going to be. We just want to know what the clarity around shape mode is that's affecting our decision. And once we know that, we can probably work with that, and being confident that that's the direction that we know the Code Maintenance Committee is also heading in. So it's not like we're going to go off in different directions anyway. We need to know, I think, where when we've got these unanswered questions about shape mode, if we can answer those questions, that then clears us to get on with what we need to do, and unless the Code Maintenance Committee kind of changes its mind and says, oh, actually, no, now we've thought of this, we're going to change it. I mean, that's unlikely to happen. So I think it's not going to be a case of we'll all end up in different places.
Yeah,
Well
Jodie,
said.
sorry, you wanted to say something.
No, I just agree with Clive. No.
All right. Thank you.
I
I
think
saw a
this
hand. Oh, just
is
before, sorry, FM. Yeah,
Stefan.
I saw a hand go up and then go back down again. I'll let you speak, FM, but just to let someone know, if you think you've got your hand up, you probably haven't.
Okay. I think
But
I
FM,
tried
yes.
to. Yeah, I think I tried to. I was just wondering. This work, then, this kind of joint work, would that be done on the main listservs that are for the two committees, or are you thinking of something separate that could concentrate on this specific thing while other people are working on other things? I'm just thinking about
So
it.
what I was envisaging was that the outcome of an initial joint discussion would be something, and I'm not completely I favour shape mode, so I might need a bit of help. So this is just an exemplar, but what I was expecting was we would have a discussion. The outcome of that discussion would be we need a shape mode terminator. This is what the shape mode terminator is going to be, and this is broadly speaking when you're going to be able to use it, but that it's not in the language of the rule book. It's not written with a subclause number and a whole list of examples, but we know what we want. We know what the dots are going to be, and we know when we're going to be able to use them. And then in parallel, Clive can write up some symbols based on that common understanding, and we can write up the minutiae of it in the rules, also from that common understanding.
Thanks, that helps.
Jen.
So it was, I had originally not, wasn't sure if I had lowered my hand, so then I raised it and lowered it. But I just wanted to say, and I don't, maybe this is, anyway, we do have a shape terminator. I think our discussion is whether we need to continue having one. But I get what you're saying. I think that would make sense. I think if we have, because it's kind of a separate point I wanted to raise too about the subcommittees, because I think we could really get a lot done that way. I think we would just have to make sure that we know how we're keeping track of all the sub
Yes.
like all of what the subcommittees are doing. Again, I think it could be a way to hugely, I almost said speed up production. That's not what I mean, but you know what I mean.
That's fine.
I don't know where that came from, but yeah, I think it would be. I think we just need to make sure that we just have a way of keeping tabs on everything that's
going on.
And I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah, like a reporting, a way that the subcommittees report back to the larger group. But all of the,
because
we want to keep the involvement and, you know, some feedback going the other direction as well. The ability to have input from the larger committee if needed.
Because I'm thinking observers are not going to know.
No.
Yeah, I just think that sometimes we have the discussions and it gets, you know, just goes on so much and it can be overwhelming when it's maybe just subtle points, you know, and it might just be you're thinking things out loud. Like sometimes this goes on anyway. There are emails that come to me from, you know, maybe just one person on the committee. They might have a thought and, you know, and then we decide, oh, you know, that's a good point. Let's share it with everyone. But it's just so many emails, aren't there?
Yeah,
and I just wanted to make sure that we could keep track somehow in some way.
I should also just say I wasn't necessarily proposing a subcommittee for this piece of work. I take your point, and I think it's something that probably as the executive we need to think about. I mean, if we're going to have a committee for emojis, you know, who should be allowed to be on that committee and what rights do they have in the broader committee? You know, if we need to bring in an expert to talk about emojis, do they then have an automatic right to observe on the code maintenance committee more generally? And I think this is something that we need to actually talk about properly. For this particular piece of work, I wasn't actually envisaging yet another subcommittee. I was just envisaging that the two committees that we have already have slightly different roles in this process, and that we could discharge those roles at the same time rather than one waiting for the other.
For this work.
Yeah, for this shape mode, yeah.
But for the problem words, that was more of a...
For problem words, for emojis, yes.
Yeah.
And for anything else we decide, I think Jen is absolutely right. We do need to have a common understanding of what who's allowed to be on a subcommittee and what are they then allowed to do as a privilege of being
Didn't you say
committee.
Yesterday that might come up at an executive meeting?
Yes.
Yeah, I brought it up yesterday too, just from a different angle.
Yeah.
It would be good to, maybe I'll put it somewhere on the to-do list for someone to bring it up.
Yeah.
Just letting you know, Matthew, that I did have some closing remarks, just so saving me a couple of minutes at the end.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that would be lovely. We'd love to hear those. I think we're kind of at a natural stopping point anyway. It's 52 minutes past the hour, and in fact, it's very rapidly approaching 53. So I don't have an awful lot of time left anyway. So I think I'd quite like to sum up where we are, just to make sure we have a common understanding of where we got to. So we've adjusted charge CM22. Frances Mary is going to work with a small group of people, including James and Phyllis, if she's up for it, and anybody else who they feel they need to bring in on that piece of work. And they will report back into the Code Maintenance Committee when they've decided what they want to say, and that decision can take as short or as long as it needs to. That's about word lists, yes. We will have a meeting of, at the very least, the CMC and the UEB Tech Committee, and I think probably invite people from the Braille Technology Committee as well, to discuss the principles of, number one, typeforms, and how typeforms affect, so how Unicode letters that have things that look a little bit like typeforms, so like double struck, like capital bold letters and things like that, how do we want to, can we reach a common principle for how to deal with those? And secondly, can we reach a principled understanding of what we'd like to do with shape mode? And then, based on the outcome of that meeting, we will be able to prioritise our next piece of work. But we envisage that we will publish the errata, including the updates to section 3.2, 3.23 in particular. We'll publish that errata as soon as we can once the vote on section 6 is done. We'll then, as the Code Maintenance Committee, work on our next big piece of work will be section 9 on type forms. We'll then look at section 5 on grade 1 indicators, because that's a relatively short piece of work to do, and we can try and embed those updates from GTM, and then we can move on to longer term work. And if it turns out that shape mode needs to be moved slightly up the priority list, we can agree that at the September meeting. But hopefully that is a fair summary of where we got to. I have 5 minutes left. Hearing no opposition to where we got to, I'd like to say thank you very much to everybody for these past two sessions and for working with me as Code Maintenance Officer. I'm not quite done yet, so I look forward to continuing to work with you. And Jodie, I think you had some remarks, so I shall pass it over to you.
Well, thank you, Matthew. I wanted to say that I'm honoured, excited, and very much looking forward to joining the executive and working with you and all the members and observers on the Code Maintenance Committee. I must say that you're a hard act to follow, though, leading with warmth and such natural charisma. I don't have a way with words like yourself. Thank you, though, for all your work, you know, overcoming the substantial challenges and delivering us the third edition of the rulebook. And in recent months, navigating the tricky territory we encountered with Section 6 numeric mode. I'd also wanted to thank you for agreeing to a transition period where we work together, and your willingness to continue to be involved in ICEB and the Code Maintenance Committee, and perhaps leading, you know, once I take over the role, leading my work to do with emojis, for example. That's much appreciated, as is your outstanding report, the CMC report, helping to put in place all the items that need our attention. I think it's been a great midterm so far, and I'm really optimistic that coming together like this will re-energise discussions and our efforts to progress this important work. Thank you.
Thank you, Jodie. That's very kind of you. And with that said, I shall pass it back over to Judy to close the session.
Thank you, Matthew, and thank you, Jodie. And I look forward to working with both of you for the next few months. And Jodie, I will add you to the executive committee list, and you can begin to attend meetings if you wish.
Thanks, Judy.
All right.
I look forward to the early mornings. Yeah. I look forward to springtime when
yes.
I can push the clock forward an hour.
Yes, I was thinking we should really have this midterm in the winter, in the Northern Hemisphere winter, Southern Hemisphere summer, because our times would be closer together. And it would be later in Australia and earlier in Europe, and it would help a little.
That's a good
idea.
Apart. Wouldn't the times be further apart?
I think they'd be closer together. Well, I don't know.
No, I think they would. I think that's right. Because when Chantelle's moderating the Braillists meetings, it's always later at Christmas time and earlier in the summer.
Oh.
Yeah, because we go back and, we'd have to figure it out.
We'll have to figure it out. But anyway. Yeah.
It's 7 a.m.
It's amazing, this time thing is so complex. And those of us who deal with it all the time still have trouble wrapping our heads around it. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone. We will adjourn for today, and we'll see you all tomorrow at 2000 UTC.
Country report.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.